Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The meeting is called to order. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, we are meeting today to discuss only one item between now and 1 o'clock. The agenda for this meeting is a briefing by the ambassador of the State of Palestine on the latest developments in Palestine. It gives me a special pleasure and honor to introduce to you Ambassador Ali Ahmed Halime. Your Excellency, you're welcome. He is accompanied by Dr. Bernard Sabela, member of the Palestinian Parliament. We will take a presentation from Ambassador Halime, as long as you wish, but we would hope that we'd also leave sufficient time for interaction so that at the end of this meeting we have established the fullest understanding of the situation in Palestine as it obtained lately. Ambassador Hame, is basically a scholar and a long-serving member of the Palestinian national movement. He holds a Bachelor of Arts in Arabic Language and Literature from Arab Beirut University. From 1974 to present, he has served the Palestinian people in various capacities. 74 to 75, he joined the committee dealing with matters related to humanitarian needs of Palestinian refugees during the war in Lebanon. 75 to 78, joined the Palestinian National Front in Lebanon. 78 to 82, he was transferred to the political department of the Palestinian Liberation Organization's headquarters in Beirut, appointed to the Palestinian Liberation Organization office in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, in the capacity of counselor. The Tanzanian government accorded the Palestinian Liberation Organization full diplomatic status. From 1980 to 1982, he was appointed head of mission, charged the affairs, embassy of the Palestinian Liberation Organization to Tanzania. 1983, accredited as the Palestinian Liberation Organization's representative in Harare to the Republic of Zimbabwe. 1984, became ambassador of the PLO. 1998, the Republic of Zimbabwe formally recognized the State of Palestine, thereby altering the status of the mission in Harare to that of the Embassy of the State of Palestine. 1989 to 2001, he became Dean of the Diplomatic Corps in Zimbabwe. 2001, accredited as Delegate General of Palestine to Ireland. And in January 2006, Ambassador Halime was accredited as Ambassador of the State of Palestine to the Republic of South Africa. Briefly stated, that is his background. Ambassador, you may address the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for reading my CV, actually. But the arrangement which I have made actually a few days back, that Dr. Sabela will be making the presentation on behalf of the Palestinians, because we thought he's coming straight from Palestine and he has all the fresh information about the development in our part of the world. And on the basis of that, I sent him his CV. So I hope, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, to give the floor to Dr. Sabela, and who is a member of the Palestine Legislative Council. He's a parliamentarian, actually, and so he could elaborate on issues related to also the South Africa, Palestine relationship. If you have not gotten finished the members of Parliament or the committee, that's going to be the situation now. But I did discuss this previously with your office.
Yes, because we respect your arguments and I'm not apologizing for the people. But Dr. Sabra, you are free to address the
committee. And he will give some information about himself too.
Honourable Chair and distinguished members of the Foreign Affairs Committee, it's indeed a pleasure to address you, and let me first thank you for giving the Ambassador and myself the opportunity to be here with you on this specific date, which commemorates the 40th anniversary of Israeli occupation of the Palestinian and Arab lands. We are in a situation of continuous challenges in the Middle East, and specifically in terms of Arab-Israeli relationship, and particularly the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land. At present, all of you know about the Arab Peace Initiative. And the Arab Peace Initiative is one of hundreds of initiatives that have been put on the table year after year after year, with no end in sight to the continuing conflict and continuous troubles in the Holy Land, in both Palestine and Israel. And the Arab Peace Initiative is a initiative that is based to great extent on UN Resolution 242, and it calls on Israel to withdraw from all territories occupied in 1967 and to recognize the right of return of Palestinian refugees in return to full Arab recognition of Israel. And yet this offer, which we see as a generous, very generous offer by all Arab states, has not been reciprocated by Israel. And in fact, so far, we have had lip service by some Israeli politicians, not by the government of Israel, but no real action on this point. A majority of our people, of our Palestinian people, are for a two-state solution. And recent opinion polls indicate that an overwhelming majority of our Palestinian people support the Arab Peace Initiative and support mutual recognition of the two states and to resolve all outstanding issues of conflict between Palestine and Israel. And when Mr. Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, says that we have no counterpart on the Palestinian side, this is not accepted by our people, because our people, including the unity government, including Hamas, knows that the address for negotiations with Israel is the president of the Palestinian National Authority, Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, who is also the president of the PLO, the chairman of the PLO. And accordingly, we as a people have given Mr. Abbas the power, the authority to negotiate with Israel. And we can be teaching that we as a people have an address, and the address is Mr. Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the National Authority. And we challenge Israel and the Israeli government to pick up on our own position and to enter into serious peace negotiations, because the current situation is not tenable. Absolutely not tenable. You have 1.4 million Palestinians in Gaza, over a million of them under the age of 25, and they absolutely see no hope for the future. The continuation of conflict would mean that these young people are left with no choice but to become more extremist, to become more fundamental, and to go to extremes that even the present Hamas unity government is not considering at all, would be considered a moderate, a middle of the road, if we don't give these young people hope. Now, the Palestinian people we have come a long way to recognizing the reality of Israel. And what pains us is that Israel is refusing to accept our basic rights. And Israel is following a policy that is a one of separation, with a wall that extends for over 700 kilometers, and that in a sense does not allow people to use even their own agricultural land in the West Bank, and that would not allow people to move freely from a town like Bethlehem to the city of Jerusalem or to Ramallah, except through a permit system that is not in reality a one of respecting basic human rights, and this is the exception, because it does deny the freedom of movement for the Palestinian people, and it doesn't allow us really to enjoy the basic rights of education, movement, and religious worship. Yes, some in Israel would tell you that, well, we have in Ramadan given blanket permits for Muslims over the age of 45 to enter Jerusalem. Aren't we great? And the answer, definitely not. Because by giving permits, you are pointing to a basic deficiency and first basic inequality in the system. And you are not allowing people who wish to visit Al-Aqsa Mosque free entry. Then they come back to you and say, well, around Christmas time, we offer Palestinian Christians the right to visit Bethlehem. Yes, but this exception is really a bad reflection of the system that is operating. Because a person who wishes to visit the Holy Sepulchre from Bethlehem, or a person from Jerusalem who wishes to visit the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem, should be allowed to do that freely. He or she is not a security threat. Never a security threat. If you give blanket permission in Ramadan and around Christmas time, why can't you lift up these impediments to freedom of movement? Currently in the West Bank, there are over 500, according to a World Bank report that came out on May 9, 2007. There are over 500 checkpoints, military, Israeli military checkpoints, and other physical impediments that do not allow Palestinians to move from one side to another, not simply from the West Bank to Israel, but within the West Bank itself. We cannot, nobody can argue that with a separation wall, with the physical impediments and checkpoints, and with the continuing expansion of Israeli Jewish settlements in the West Bank, where there are over 150 Jewish settlements, and you have 270,000 Jewish settlers, and in effect, that World Bank report is saying the expansion of settlements, together with the war, together with the physical impediments and checkpoints, have really denied Palestinians access to over 50% of the West Bank territory. So what do you talk about when you say two-state solution? Recently I have had a meeting with the Prime Minister of Brandenburg in Germany, and it was in Ramallah. And he told me, the first thing he told me was, I do not see the way things are going that there will be a place for a two-state solution. Because basically what Israel is doing at the moment is really doing everything possible to torpedo the two-state solution. And when they come back and say, well, we don't have a Palestinian partner to speak with, and we say, no, you have a Palestinian partner, they absolutely do not want to see what we see. And I feel that the people, our people, think and feel and experience a policy of really separation, control, and a policy of wanting to have peace while at the same time continuing with occupation. And we say it very clearly, you cannot have your cake and eat it too. If you want to have peace, then make genuine peace. We Palestinians have come a long way to accepting the reality of Israel. Israel needs to make a clear statement that it wants to accept the reality of Palestinians and their basic rights. Otherwise, the future is going to be indeed very bleak. And if Israel thinks that only through security means and measures it can continue with its policies, then it is absolutely mistaken. Now, allow me to speak of another subject related, because everything in the Arab-Israeli-Palestinian conflict is related. One of the things that disturbs us is the fact that the Palestinian Legislative Council has been paralyzed. And while some people say that it has been paralyzed because of the sensitivities that exist between Hamas and Fatah, the reality says that with over 42 Palestinian members of parliament who are imprisoned and detained by the Israelis, we cannot have a quorum. It's so difficult to have a quorum. So as to that, the reality that you have members of parliament such as myself who travel on assignment, then it is almost impossible to have a quorum to sit in parliament in regular sessions of parliament. Now some people say, well, this is a way Israel is putting pressure on the Palestinian to stop the Qassam launching rockets. Or this is the way that Israel is sending a message to the Palestinians, to Hamas in particular, that if you launch a rocket, we're going to detain and imprison the political leadership. Now we think, all of us think, that this is not fair. We think we have a problem with the Qassam launching, and President Abbas has said that again and again, and all of us have said in Parliament and in the Cabinet, many of us have said the launching of Qassam rockets is not good for us, and it should stop. But Israel goes, takes incredible steps to really block any possibility of us ordering our internal home so as to be in a position to be able really to come out of this mess. So by imprisoning 42 members of parliament, by extending a detention order, administrative detention order, to Dr. Nasser Shaib, who was supposed to be here today with me to address your honorable committee, and not allowing him, he's the Minister of Education, not allowing him to be here is really not a step in the right direction. And I have to mention two other people in front of you who are very important to us, and one of them is the President of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Dr. Aziz Dweik, who is in prison since more than a year, and who is a prominent geographer, academician, who got his PhD degree from an American university, and he is a man who spoke a lot of sense and who showed leadership to the PLC, to our parliament, and unfortunately we miss him as we miss other colleagues. One other person who is detained by Israel since 2002, and I like to bring his name to the table, is Marwan Barghouti. Marwan Barghouti is a young leader of the Fatah Tanzim. He has been accused by Israel of ordering operations inside Israel that killed some Israelis, a number of Israelis. But Marwan Barghouti is a man who speaks of peace, who has a peace vision, and he wants really to move us forward. He is a person of leadership, and we are hoping that Israel would release all imprisoned members of parliament and would release also Marwan Barghouti, Ahmed Jaradar, who is the head of the PFLP, and others who are in prison in Israel. I have to refer to a recent document presented by the U.S. to Israel and the National Authority, and that is the confidence building benchmarks that was presented in early May to both the National Authority and to the government of Israel. And the benchmark document, which was drafted by General Dayton, who is the security advisor to Major General Keith Dayton, who is the U.S. security coordinator in the Palestinian territories and in Israel. And in that paper, there was the argument by the U.S. government, by the State Department, that there is need to ease the conditions of movement imposed on Palestinians. And Israel should do everything to enable Palestinians to move more freely. And on the Palestinian side, the demand was that the government or the president of Palestine would do everything in his power to stop the launching of the Qassam rockets from the North Gaza Strip. Now, our Palestinian position has been that we are for the benchmark document, but the response from Israel was so negative that even General Dayton has written to Washington, to his Washington bosses and officials, saying that the Israeli defense establishment, and I'm quoting from a Haaretz report, objected every time suggestions were made to alleviate the Palestinian situation. So even if the U.S., some in the U.S. are taking such a position, it means we have a serious problem with the Israeli position. There is no movement on the Israeli position forward on this or other things. Now, some people say, well, but the Palestinians, we have not been united, that there is the infighting that took place between Hamas and Fatah in Gaza. And therefore, this has weakened the Palestinian position. And I think this is what our people are saying as well. And our people is sending a clear message to both Fatah and Hamas that the Mecca agreement in Saudi Arabia has been a good agreement, and that both Hamas and Fatah should really subscribe to that agreement, and the unity government should be working. So our position is yes, we don't want any infighting, and yes, we want for the unity government to work, and yes, we want for some stability to take place among Palestinians. We have a serious problem, though. Israel continues to withhold over $700 million of tax collected by Israel on behalf of the national authority. And Minister of Finance, Salam Fayyad, of the national authority, of the unity government, says, and he's very well respected in Washington, and I'm sure elsewhere, he says that this, it is not possible to stabilize the financial situation of the government and of the national, of the 180,000 government employees without having Israel release the $700 million. Of late, there has been talk that Israel may be willing to do so provided there are some conditions met. We haven't seen what these conditions are. Now, another problem we have is the boycott. The boycott declared on the national unity government by the international community, specifically by the U.S. and the EU. And in this respect, we have all praise to all governments, such as South African government and the government of Norway, that took positions that said that the boycott is essentially wrong and that this boycott should be lifted. And the purpose for lifting the boycott is really to stabilize the economic and social situation in the Palestinian territory. In my opinion, and the opinion of many international authorities, stabilizing of the economic and social situation of Palestinians would lead to the strengthening of those elements who support President Abbas in negotiating with Israel, and would lead to the restructuring of our shattered institutions, including the PLC. And I think if our institutions, Palestinian institutions, break down, then all of us are going to pay the price. And when I say all of us, it includes also Israel and the people of Israel. So we need to have a vision. We need to have a vision, and we need to lift the boycott on the European and American account. This is much needed. If there is continued boycott, then a political process may not be possible. I have to specifically mention that I was in Gaza when the new government was sworn in, when the new Palestinian government was sworn in. That was March 17, 2007. And believe me, what I saw in Gaza was something that troubled me on a personal level. Because here you have hundreds of thousands of young people, as I mentioned before, who are coming out of their schools. Luckily in Palestine, we have almost 100% participation in the schools. Enrollment, that's the word. We have 100% enrollment in our schools. And the good news also is we have 100% enrollment of our girls as well. Yes. And so we are proud of that. And even in spite of Israeli occupation, the best thing that has happened to us is that in the last 20 or so years, we have been able to enroll all female students in our school system. And we have over 1 million students in the elementary, secondary, and elementary, preparatory, and high school. So we have also good news coming out of Palestine, and this is one of them. At a certain point, we were hoping economically to be doing better. Now came the boycott, and the boycott really hit us very hard. Up until today, you have heard in South Africa, there are some teachers and some medical personnel in Palestine that are not receiving salary. Not salary increase, but they are not receiving their full salary. So
on strike.
Yeah. No, we cannot. We went on strike. We went on strike, but the going on strike really exacerbated the situation rather than making it better. Because what the average Palestinian wants, he doesn't want the ideology or argument of Hamas or Fatah.
Mm.
He wants to be able to raise his children. We are very responsible people. We want to be able to go on with our lives. We want to be able to enjoy eventually the results of a peace agreement. We want really to go forward and be a model. Talking about the model, I have to say, I have visited Soweto yesterday and Orlando, and allow me to say that we as Palestinians have taken so much strength from the South African experience. And you have been a great model for us. As a country, as a government, and as a people. And your support is very essential to move us forward and to prod both sides, the Israelis and the Palestinians, to make some sense and to move forward in overcoming the consequences of conflict. Your parliament, and specifically your honorable Foreign Affairs Committee, by inviting Mr. Ambassador and myself to this hearing, to this session, is in fact sending our people a sign of support. I know as in any government, there are people who think this way and people who think that way. But I think we are in need in the Middle East of your continued support, of the support of your people, of your government, and of your good self, so as we can make movement towards peace. We cannot stay still. We cannot let the chance of peace go by. And I think every effort should be done in order to encourage both Palestinians and Israelis to come together to make peace, in spite of our ideological and other and other differences. And I trust that your good parliament would do an effort also to ask the Israeli government to release our parliamentarians and members of the government, whether the present government or the previous government, because our hope is that also all political groups in Palestine would come on board and would be in a sense able to deliver to the people, to the Palestinian people, an opportunity for peace. Thank you very much for affording us this opportunity, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kumbhar.
Do you have any additional remarks before we open up?
It's important for your committee and Baron to continue to ask for a political settlement in the region where the two states can live side by side and contribute something to the international community and stop this kind of situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable members, you may engage with the presentation. We will get the first question or engagement from the Honourable Tom Gordon.
This is too bad. Yes, Thank you, sir, Your Excellency. I'm reminded of Leon Uris's The Exodus, and perhaps it is a good thing for us to read these things and find out what happened in Israel and how Israel was created. I want to make a few comments first and then ask a question. Your Excellency, you talked about a credible solution. We are aware of the fact that the solutions offered by Israel and her allies just cannot be acceptable, because they are founded in a morally unacceptable situation. That's the point one. You have omitted to say that this was your homeland for over 1,000 years, whereas the state of Israel has been created artificially in 1948 as a result of big power arrangements. So the state of Israel for us is an artificial creation, and it is the racial, religious arrogance of the fathers, successive prime ministers, no matter how liberal they appear to be. It is our knowledge here that settlements occurred from day one, and they continue to occur to this day. And what frightens us here in South Africa, at least us in the ANC, is the balkanization to physical walls of Palestinians within Palestinian areas. I may be wrong, but I think you omitted in your presentation to say that the major part of Palestine is now repossessed by the Israelis. So the question pertinent to that will be, what is the opinion of the Palestinian people, which governments change, come and go, or the two nation or two state theory, settlement, whatever you want to call it. That's a question related to the balkanization. Because we have gone through the process of balkanization in South Africa, and our first attempt was to de-balkanize our country and create a South Africa for all her people. The other, I'm tempted to use the original injustice as an original sin. Mm-hmm. My competition, but coming by talking about Jerusalem and Bethlehem, the life of Jesus and all the other religious leaders that have come from this. The original injustice that has gone to, basically for us rational human beings, is original sin in respect to the, with regard to the Palestinian people. Your right of return, I think it would be difficult for me to give you my candid opinion on this. Suffice to say that under the leadership and partnership of the African National Congress, this coming Saturday, to celebrate, well, not celebrate, to mark the 40th anniversary of the revolution, we are taking to the streets to demonstrate, and I hope and pray to God, that all South Africans, regardless of their political affiliations, who are beholden to justice, reconciliation, peace and harmony, will join us. And not only the affiliates of the ANC, but all South Africans, regardless of their political affiliations, if justice has to be seen to be done in Palestine. So we want to assure you, this hearing is not only designed to listen to you, it is to ensure that you communicate to your people in Palestine that the democracy-loving peoples of South Africa have a stated policy that the self-determination of Palestine ranks high on our agenda in terms of international relations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Goben, Dr. Tanko.
I'm just not sure. My hand is up first. Before any of the...
Somewhere on your list. Allow me to share the
meeting. Yeah, I'm not sure about what drives you. Sharing the group will direct you into the chair.
I don't want to argue about you. I think that my hand was off, however. That's not the reason. I think we're familiar with the history of what has happened Palestine, and it would seem encouraging, albeit there might be some very serious compromise with regard to the two-state arrangement. But I think it's a great compromise on your part if you have not betrayed the people of Palestine that you have accepted this two-state arrangement. My question is, do you see the USA and EU being even headed with regard to the treatment of both the Palestinians and the Jewish authorities? And also I would like to know, you say there are 42 imprisoned political leaders now. Are they from Hamas, Fatah, or what is the combination? Is it from both groups? I want to say, of course, it really is a tragedy, because this is the longest, now, very longest struggle that has gone on from one of, say, one visit in the Balfour Declaration in 1917, right up to 1938, 1967, up to now. It is very obvious that somebody does not want that situation to evolve. There is no way that one state, one single state, a small state like the state of Israel can help us for so long without some big power encouraging them and supporting them. Maybe all the oil wells of the Middle East must dry up before we solve the problem of Palestine.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable phone of order.
Sir, thank you, Chair. Mine is really a comment on something which I believe the Palestinians must concern themselves fundamentally. It's my own view. My interpretation is that those people who do not want the unity of the Palestinians to exist are doing all in their power to divide the Palestinians. Because the coming into being of a unity government between the various forces had strengthened the Palestinians. And therefore, all these things of withholding money, doing that, it is just meant to make sure that the Palestinians must fight amongst themselves, and thereby weakening their resolve. And so therefore, my comment is that I believe that you should do all in your power. I know it is very difficult. In a struggle, sometimes the various groups that are fighting sometimes do fight themselves. We had our own situation in the past. But it is so crucial that some of us, when we heard that you had a unity government, we were so proud and we said, this is really the fundamental part of it, so that you can then be able to determine your destiny collectively. So my comment is that I would want you also to continue to make sure that that part which is being weakened should not be scattered. It's so fundamental. Whatever happens, whatever the sanctions, but if the Palestinians are one, then I think everything will be. Let me ask you a question. Do you think, like that, firstly, let me tell you what I think.
Don't confuse us.
I really, my own conception is that the U.S. is deeply involved. You may not believe it, but I just feel that it's deeply involved, and it is the big brother that is tilting the power relations against the Palestinians. And that's my own conviction. The big power is tilting the relations against you. Even the question of arms and the question of Israel being a very small, not very big state, but it continues to have peace. Resources that I don't believe they come from the Israelite state alone. So let me ask a question after having diverged where I stand. Do you think that apart from just the U.S., which I'm talking about, are there other forces that may also be playing a part in this problem? Thank you very much, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I congratulate Dr. Sabella, our very distinguished visitor today, for the moderation and the good humor of his presentation. It stands out in great contrast to the views expressed on behalf of by Mr. Van Gogh. It's just as well he wasn't doing the
case. Freedom of speech.
I I said quite well, Mr. Van Gogh was spewing things of nonsense about the mission of sin and so on.
You're product of that.
Yes. That's right. And so I'd like to. Yes, if you'll keep Mr. Van Gogh quiet. Chairperson, the. I was very. I beg your pardon? Yes. I congratulate the presenters on the moderation of their views, which are much more impressive than when people get all heated and hot. Because what we actually need is a cooling of tempers in the Middle East. My party, which is the Democratic Alliance, believes that the continuing crisis between Israel and Palestine is one of the tragedies of our time. It's awful that it's gone on for so long. We believe in a two-state solution. We believe that it's only through a negotiated peace that we'll ever get to a resolution. We refuse to take sides. We're not accusing people of original sin and all sorts of things like that. And we're not saying, we refuse to drag South Africans into that conflict. Some people try to drag South African Jews into the conflict and blame them for whatever the Israeli government does or does not do. It would be equally ridiculous to blame South African Muslims for firing Qassam rockets or any of the other ghastly things like that. So we don't want to import your problems into our country. What we want to do is to have an even-handed approach. We think that both sides have got to be it's got to be coerced if necessary to get to a negotiating table. We don't have the recipe for every problem in the world. Our own experience teaches us that eventually a negotiated settlement is the best one. Whether our constitutional arrangements are right or wrong for elsewhere, other people must decide. But I must say that what I would like to hear as well, would have liked to have heard, was Israel here today. And have a presentation from them. And then they'd be able to, in a calm and reasoned manner, put the case one against the other. And I do hope that this Foreign Affairs Committee will see that we hear Israel's side of the story and do that quite soon so that we can see what we can do as a Parliament. We can do very little. But see what we can do to try to promote the part of the case.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable Kamako.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Member, for your presentation and thank you to the Ambassador. You know, I think here in South Africa we have been really seized with a situation, especially between Israel and Palestine, for a long time. And I'm sure with the ambassador has attended many seminars and presentations by scholars from both sides, either coming from Israel and inside the country. Mm-hmm. Was in Joburg, which we attended. So to me, I think the only question I would have said, what I want to start with, what do you think actually helped him at last in fact, because I know that was not the original position of the Palestinian people to recognize the two-state process towards resolving the problem. What do you think are the actual obstacles which block the realization and the implementation of that system, despite resolution after resolution and calling from the UN, and despite the fact that the people of Palestine have adopted what makes the Israeli government after government not to actually assent to that implement. That's one question which I want to know. And the second question, you know, what do you think can be a role of the South African government, in your own opinion, outside of what may be the South African think they are all my family trying to resolve the situation. Because really, as we are saying, we know that the situation of conflict like that is not easy to resolve. And especially a situation, because I think everybody agrees that the situation there is a very big influence and you know, involvement of external forces which are outside is beyond control of both the Palestinians and those in Israel who are actually advocating the two state solution of the situation. So I would like to go, because we are really interested too. And you know, in reality, as you have said, it is true that the only solution there, which will be a lasting solution, is when both sides are able to recognize coexistence in the same area. Going back to deep to history, we have proved in many situations in the world, it doesn't really help that much. So to me, those are the chapters in the area which I would be very much interested in.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mahal.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll start by commenting. Constitution 2005 hours in Palestine. And to both of you, Ambassador and the Doctor, I think you are including also even marriage concerning what we saw there. Because besides the use of checkpoints, there are changes. And there are improved roadblocks which are forbidding people to go and attend simple things to go to a doctor. And to me personally, I know what happened to me in one of the checkpoints which is called Abuja checkpoint. I can witness that. And then also, it is a shame in this place to learn that continuously the only part of Israel society, they don't recognize the leadership of Canada. Because the records prove that they never recognized the former president Arafat, the late Arafat. And even now with Abbas, they don't actually recognize him. Think a very, very difficult. And then also, I'm concerned because resolution is going to be part of which my worry is about the resolution 243 and also the Oslo agreement, which is not agreement, recognized, and also the benchmark, which is also a draft concern. Therefore, my question I wanted to find out is that what is the role, except the Americans, with other countries in the G8, like Germany, France, and other countries. What is their role? Because if one has to read about the human rights, which is applying across the board, no matter belong where or who, but human rights is human rights. It must be respected. And then also, the scale whereby the resolution by the United Nations is not being recognized. So, lastly, I was recently covered by by Mr. Kalako, Honorable Member Kalako, when he spoke about the role of South Africa. But the experience which I have learned, no matter if you know the language in Gaza, some of the words from the Palestinian people, when they saw us, saw me, from South Africa. They said Zanubi Africa, Mandela, Hamza. Believing that those words were very sweet, meaning that they recognize the role which can be played by South Africa. Therefore, I support the idea that if we can clarify more, not to say that there's nothing which is being done by South Africa, but if we can get more which can be played by South African government.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Peace, Chairperson, is the absence of conflict and chaos. In my mind, Your Excellency, I believe that there will never be peace in the world or in any region until and unless people's rights are not mutually respected. And yes, world peace also largely depends on areas of conflict, especially the issue of the Middle East and Palestinian issue. It's crucial. And I also feel that we cannot have peace without negotiations, political negotiations. Violence is not going to solve the problem in the Middle East. Negotiations can be based on what you really think you want and how much of it you want. Or it could be, pragmatic, if whatever pragma means. So you can either have a solution based on what you historically think you want or what you pragmatically would like to achieve. Now, we've been, as a country, we've been through it. We know how much people have given and how much they have taken. In negotiations, there's always give and take. Now, my question is, given that being the reality, how much are you or the Israelis, to what degree are they willing to give and take? Just to bring one case in point, the right of refugees to return. Now, you have all these confidence building, benchmarking, and all the other mechanisms that are there. The right of refugees to return is considered, at least by the Israelis, to be a threat to their very own existence, because they feel that it might change the entire demographics of Israel, and hence there will be no Israeli state. On the other side, we would like to see a negotiated settlement which should result in the establishment of a peaceful and a secure Palestinian state alongside a peaceful Israel. Now, what is the position of the contending parties within the TNA, for example, Hamas and Fatah, on the issue of rights of refugees to return? Because if they don't have it, that on that issue, if they don't have consensus, then how are you going to negotiate with the Israelis? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Speaker. That's interesting. Now, for many years, as I understand it, through the policy of the neighboring Arab states as well as Qatar not to recognize the existence of Israel, that has now changed. But now we find that, and as Mr. Nafar Hodwe has discovered, there are other players in the Middle East. Apart from the Americans, we have Iran, which is now going on a track of wanting to destroy Israel and wipe it off the face of the earth. And it has been fiddling in, it's reputed to be arming Hamas. Could you comment on the Iran input into the equation? Secondly, I've often wondered whether they're not extremists on both sides who don't want peace. I mean, there has been one consistent throughout the whole time, is that if any attack on Israel, whether it's by another army or by rockets, always results in an overwhelming retaliation. Now, I'm not going into the pluses or minuses of whether retaliation is right, wrong, the degree, out of balance. But the people who shoot the rockets, etc., and the suicide bombers, know what the Israeli reaction is going to be. Now, is it that those people actually know? They can do this, Israel's always going to do that. Therefore, are these people deliberately trying to mess up the efforts of the Palestinian Authority, which causes this tremendous, because they know what the Israelis are going to do. There's one thing that's sure as you know on your face. You do something, the Israelis are going to react in 10 times. And then the third one, could I just get some clarification on the fact that there's some 40-odd Palestinian members of parliament in Israeli jails who have been detained by the Israelis. How did they get there? Were they living in Israel? when they were elected, were they in Israeli jails when they were elected? Did Israel go in and grab them, or is it a bit of both? I'm just not quite sure. Thank you.
Last question will come from Honorable Matrafo.
Thank you, Sebastian. My own emotional rational observation of this process is absolutely in line with your comment you quoted from the German Prime Minister. I've been observing this for the last few years. It seems to me, Ambassador, to be a shift within the Israel government towards a movement away from the two-state solution. That's our observation. This is what I've been observing. And this is a concern because it does not only go against the international law by way of resolution of the United Nations Security Council and other resolutions. It is also problematic politically, of course, by way of access to the initiative, solidarity from other countries like ours. And I think also, as South Africans should realize on another score, if we're not interested in the politics, this is problematic economically. And you said this is a problem for all of us, and you meant how much and for that. I want to say to you, it's a problem for all of us in the world, this issue. Because it impacts on us directly, as we sit here today, as far as the issues of the economy. Because this is one conflict that always has impact directly on all nations, economies by way of interest rates, oil prices. And from my perspective, this is specifically problematic because what is done with this conflict, it then marginalizes the development agenda of the developing nations. That's what it does. In terms of direct impact to all nations. Because at all these material forums, which are supposed to discuss among other things the development agenda, then that agenda is marginalized by a need to look into this conflict, which manifests itself in different ways, be it Iran, Iraq, or something like that. We know that the root cause is this issue. As a cause of all the Middle East conflict. So I'm just saying this is a big problem. I think it's not something to gloss over. Some conflict, some far away, taking some too long, and it might not be important. I think there's no import of this issue. We are part and parcel of this conflict. This is my view, and the resolution of it is good for all of us, for all humanity, especially the developing world. The development agenda being consistent on the agenda of the market. So the question is therefore, what I started by saying is that there's an ideological shift away from the two state solution. So my question is, what is the strategy of dealing with that? That issue. To put it simple, they say who's the viable partner from your side. My question is who's the viable partner, your partner on the other side. So sometimes in Israel, what you need is a strong general to deal with this issue. A person who will just mobilize all the forces from a security point of view if that person is committed. So my question is, who's your valuable partner? Because we can do everything, we don't have a valuable partner. I think South Africa already has a valuable partner. So that's what that's
so thank you very much, honorable members, for your questions of brought out the different perspectives. And reach your initial presentation. In the eighth time, you have only for the vendor, but this may take us to the conclusion of the presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, all honorable members, for your comments and for questions. And I think what I have heard here, what we have heard here, is really a reflection of the dilemma in which both Palestinians and Israelis live. And some of the positions presented here are reflected also among Palestinians. On the other side, they are also reflected among some Israelis. What worries me is not really the question of being mild or being not mild. What concerns me, for example, allow me to relate to something personal. When I was elected to the Palestinian parliament, I was of the opinion that there is no usefulness in meeting with Israelis, because we have been meeting and meeting and meeting, and nothing has come out of that. Now, when I hear my constituents and started listening to them about their daily problems and the need to move forward, that in a sense started changing my position. Not because I think meeting with Israelis or listening to them would in a sense bring peace closer, but at least I would say to my own conscience that I'm doing something to at least explore and knock on the door and see if there is an answer. And believe me, many of us Palestinians who are living there are in such a position. Now, we talk about morality. I think not simply what you have mentioned, but also the present realities of Israeli continued occupation and the construction of the wall and the checkpoints and the land expropriation and the balkanization of Palestinians within their own locality. It's not ethically maintainable. It's not maintainable. And I tell my Jewish and Israeli interlocutors that it must be an ethical problem to them, and a serious ethical problem. And now, the problem, though, is that some Israelis, and I wouldn't say the overwhelming majority, maybe the overwhelming majority, believe that the system that would maintain Israel is a system of security and control. And therefore, that system of security and control would guarantee that Israel can do everything possible, can even do away with the two-state solution and have a Bantustan state or mini-Bantustan state next door, and do away with it. I mean, you know, we have a perfect system, security system. We have the fourth. This is the argument that some Israelis may use. There is the fourth best army in the world, and therefore everything can be handled through security and through the military. And I think this is the most serious mistake Israel is making. The Lebanese war in the summer of 2006 points to that. The military is not a solution. A military system is not the solution. You have to negotiate a peace agreement. Now, one of the questions that has been repeated here is the right of return and whether Palestinians are of the consensus. We are all of the consensus. I would say 99.9% of the Palestinian people are of the consensus that the right of return must be acknowledged. And we are not asking something that is counter to international resolution. Resolution, the General Assembly Resolution 194 speaks specifically, and I am going to quote here. It says, the refugees wishing to return to their homes and live at peace with their neighbors should be permitted to do so at the earliest practicable date, and that compensation should be paid for the property of those choosing not to return, and for loss of or damage to property which, under principles of international law or inequity, should be made good by the governments or authorities responsible. Now, Israel definitely does not want to acknowledge any responsibility whatsoever to the creation of the Palestinian refugee problem. I'm myself a refugee. I come from a refugee family. And so, Mr. Ambassador, but we are not stuck. The majority of the Palestinian people today are not stuck in ideological positions. Not that we are going to turn our back to the hurt and pain and wounds of our forefathers and parents. No. We have much respect to the pain of our parents. And I know personally what my parents have gone through without specifying. But we need to move forward. And always, the pretense of Israel or Israeli supporters is that when you listen to Palestinians, they are always threatening, they are always wanting to do this, they are always wanting to do that. No, I'm telling you today, we are not threatening, we are being threatened, and yes, we are concerned, and average people are concerned about the Fatah rockets. We want them to be stopped, not because we think Israel is a moral state, but because we think the agenda on which we are working is much bigger than simply hit and hit back. And therefore, we want to move forward. We could adopt positions, tougher positions that would lead us nowhere. But I think the challenge today, and we have been asked here, what's the role of South Africa? The role of South Africa is not to convince Hamas of the need to make peace with Israel. I think even Hamas, and I'll let that number, I think even Hamas knows that there is no way out without coming to some negotiated agreement and accord with Israel. The problem today is not the Palestinians. The problem today is the Israeli position. And the Israeli position is not giving us any opportunity to really go forward. I was three, 4 weeks ago in Brussels, invited by the EU Parliament with Israeli and Palestinian parliamentarians to speak about prospects for peace, about the role of the EU in pushing peace forward. Sitting next to me was an Israeli, the Israeli ombudsman of the second channel of Israeli television. And as his colleagues, Israeli colleagues were speaking, one after the other, some of them, not all of them, he was turning to me and said, we are absolutely paranoid. Every time you give us an opportunity to go forward, we always come out with pretext not to go forward. When you say Hamas is willing to make a truce, we say, no, the truth is not good enough. Would Hamas be willing to disarm? If Hamas disarms, would Hamas be willing to do something else? If that something else is done, but what about the Iranian role? What about the Syrian role? What about this role and that role? So always there are excuses to portray the Palestinians and to portray the Arabs as not being serious about making peace. To tell you the honest truth, I am afraid as a Palestinian that Israel, once before engaging seriously in any peace, in the Arab peace initiative, wants to have the recognition of all Arab states, wants to have the normalization of relations with all Arab states without even starting the negotiating process, before they are starting the... And this is not acceptable. This is not even acceptable to the average person in Palestine. So how do you expect us to accept that? Therefore, when we come to the question of the EU and the US and the role of South Africa, the EU, I refer to them and other Palestinians refer to them as the philanthropists of Europe. You know, they are the ones who give the money. But in a sense, they follow the tune of the US. They do not go out, they do not have their own, as you also may know, they do not have their own position. Now, they try sometimes to push in this direction or that direction, but they are not courageous enough, for example, to follow the example of Norway. Norway did a wonderful thing by saying, I'm going to recognize the UNITI government, and I'm going to go with it, and I'm going to send money directly to the UNITI government. And in my opinion, all governments in the world do likewise. Because the issue is not to punish. You know, you talk about democracy. You know, we want to teach those Palestinians how to be democratic. So we go to elections, and we elect a majority of Hamas. And then we are punished for that. I mean, democracy is not conditional. Democracy is not conditional.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes, I have ideological differences with Hamas.
Yeah.
But you have to respect the logic of democracy.
Yeah.
You cannot choose the outcome of democratic processes.
Mm.
If you trust the people, then the people have to judge in the end whether the present government is really giving what it promises, or it's not giving. And it is up in the next elections to punish the government if it is not doing its job. And the opposition needs to order its ranks and work hard to convince that next time we're going to do a better job. This is a democratic process. But the international community cannot come to a small country like Palestine, occupied country like Palestine, and then penalize us for electing whoever we elect. This is very, very important. Now, South Africa. South Africa, in my opinion, has an important role to play, because you have a democratic system. And as you mentioned, whenever you say you are from South Africa and Palestine, everybody mentions Mandela. And everybody mentions Soweto. And everybody mentions your great struggle. And how you came a long way towards reconciliation. So your example and your model is very important. Now, I don't know how much the government or the parties, different parties, have the ear of some in Israel or in Washington. But I think it is very important to relate to them the need to move forward. Because there is a Palestinian partner. And yes, we are not, by insisting that we are a good partner, we are not forgetting that we have lost land, and someone here mentioned that most of the land, in fact, the figure is that when Israel was established in 1948, the Jewish population had only 6% of the land, while the overwhelming percentage of the land belongs to the Palestinians. And yet there have been over 400 villages, Palestinian villages, that were wiped out since 1948. By Israel. And one of them, I remember it because I'm reading a novel nowadays, is Ein Hod, which is a small village that has become a village of artists and intellectuals and writers and so on, craftsmen, Israeli. But the original inhabitants of that village ended up moving to a non-sized village inside Israel today. So yes, there are tragedies. And yes, there are injustices. And yes, there is no moral basis. Yes. But what do we do? What do we do? One Hamas member one time, young leader, university leader, asked me, you are exactly what you said, a member. He said, you are talking about negotiations. Why are you talking about negotiations? Shouldn't we be struggling hard against occupation? And I said, I'm not saying that struggle is not a form. Struggle is a form. But my question back to you is, do you struggle for the sake of struggle, or do you struggle for the sake of finding a way out? If you struggle for the sake of struggle, then we are hopeless. We are going to struggle with each other till we wipe each other out. And therefore, we're not going to be able to do anything. Now, one other question on the U.S. On the U.S. The U.S. will never, in my opinion, and the opinion of many, and I'm sure many of you here in this hall, would not change its position. It's so stuck with the power of some in the Israeli lobby, to the extent that there are some others in the U.S. who are thinking seriously of starting a different Jewish lobby in Washington. Very serious about that. Because it seems that when you go to Washington, to Capitol Hill, as Afif Safi, our ambassador in Washington, always says, you go to Israeli-occupied Capitol Hill, you know. And so it seems this is a really frustrating element in our relationship with Washington. We realize that we cannot move forward without the U.S. taking a position of at least even-handedness. Somebody here mentioned even-handedness. But if it doesn't come through, we have a problem. We have a serious problem. For example, the benchmark document. Condoleezza Rice was pushing for it. Now, the White House was kind of, you know, more malleable, not really pushing for it. We don't want to do anything that would hurt Israel or would put Israel in a very insecure position or something of that nature. So Washington needs to be firm. If we want to go forward, Washington needs to be with us. If Washington is not with us, we cannot do anything. All the good talk, all the good wishes will amount to nothing. Finally, I have to mention that when we talk about the Arab states, that we as Palestinians are cognizant of the fact that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, other Arab countries, have been very instrumental in supporting us. And not only financially, but like in Egypt, in terms of ending the actual infighting between Hamas and Hamas and Fatah. Jordan, that has been a good neighboring country, also supporting us. And in a sense, playing an intermediary role with the Israelis. But what we always feel is that even this positive role played by our Arab neighbors, it's always manipulated, either by the Israelis or the Americans, to point towards certain directions that are not acceptable sometimes by the majority of the people. So we want, we appreciate and we respect the work done by our Arab brothers, and we want that role to be ever active in supporting Palestinians to come to the desired state. Finally, a question on Iran. I am not that worried about Iran, because if you look at the overall situation, Iran is talking what it is talking about, in no position to defend Iran or to oppose Iran and so on. because for us, our primary concern is the Palestinian cause. But for us, when we hear, when we listen to Iran on the one side and we listen to the Israelis on the other side, we think it's just mutual politics, that both sides are playing politics. The president of Iran would want to use his language in order to tell the Israelis, you are doing us great disservice with Washington and with others, you know, on the nuclear issue, on other issues. Yes, there are relationships between Iran and Hezbollah and so on. But that goes to show that without a permanent solution, as you have said, to the Arab-Israeli-Palestinian-Israeli conflict, there would be no peace and stability in the whole region. I think if we can move forward to bring about an honorable peace that is accepted by our people, and I insist by our people, because even if President Abbas goes to negotiate with the Israelis, he has to come back to our parliament and to our people. And therefore, we have to strike a peace that is acceptable to our people. If it is not acceptable to our people, it cannot be acceptable to anybody. And I trust and I hope that your concern and your willingness to listen to Mr. Ambassador and to myself this morning is an indication that irrespective of what political group or what political position you take, you would continue to support the move forward towards a genuine, honorable peace between Palestine and Israel. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Thank you very much. I trust that you have a better and more complete understanding of the situation between Palestine as it obtains today. And your questions have assisted us to clarify our understanding even more. I've noted that the Honorable Jason claims or wish that Israel should have been here. But for the purpose of this meeting, the agenda was written by the ambassador on the latest developments in Palestine. So I thought you will consider this in the future. Tomorrow, honorable members, there will be a full debate in the National Assembly focusing on the situation in Palestine in the Middle East.
Today
at 2 o'clock, so you're all invited. I think that's when we'll hear more party politics. But we as the committee will record this submission, we'll process it and submit it to the parliament. It will inform our further interaction. I do want to confirm that the main credit by our commitment to universal human rights. Multilateralism, our government at this point and in our parliament are committed to the two-state solution, and we really would like to see a resolution of the conflict in a manner that secures life and human rights and peace for all the people of Palestine and Israel. That we wish to confirm.
If Mr. Gibson and the honorable members of this committee would like me to be present also when the Israeli ambassador is here, so we can have an interaction also where you could have a live debate. I don't know the nature of your meeting usually allows such a kind of debate, but we are open for debating the Israeli ambassador. I am open for debating the Israeli ambassador. So you can remember to judge later on the entire situation. Thank you.
special offer. Other members may be a refreshment
don't cut this out. I'm excited.
Oh, this is something else.